Borough Heights Planning Board meeting, June 9, 2011.
Ready, Mr. Chairman, if you're ready?
This is visual for the power.
Yep.
Before the power cuts in? I'd like to call this meeting to order. If everybody could please rise and join me with the pledge to the flag.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay. Good evening, everyone. As per requirement of Public Law 1975, Chapter 231, notice is hereby given that this is a regular meeting of the Borough of Highlands Planning Board and all requirements have been met. Notice has been transmitted to the Asbury Park Press and the Two River Times, and notice has been posted on the public bulletin board. Roll call.
Mr. Mullen? Mr. O'Neill is absent this evening. Mr. Schollner?
Here.
Mr. Parla?
Here.
Mr. Roberts is absent. Ms. Peterson is absent. Mayor Nolan?
Here.
Mr. Stockton?
Here.
Ms. Ruby?
Here.
Mr. Shields is absent.
Okay, we do have a quorum. Looking at our agenda tonight, there are no items for discussion under item 5, 6, 7, 8, or 9, motions for adjournment, and any other motions or new business or approval of resolutions or unfinished or adjourned hearings or hearings on new business. So we jump down to item 10 on the agenda, action on any other business. And I do see a few people in the audience here. I just wanted to let you know that under these two items, if you're here for that, they're for the board's discussion, and the board may or may not decide to open it up for public questions. I'll let that be the call of the board. And if you do have questions, please raise your hand. And before you ask your question, please state your name for the record. I'm trying to control that so that we don't have a lot of different conversations for the record for the recording. So, with that said, we have two items to discuss under any actions of any other business. And the first is a presentation from Steve Zalecki from our Environmental Commission with regard to the bike path. So Steve, welcome.
Thank you, Chairman. Steve Zalecki, Chairman of the Environmental Commission here in town. And I have a short presentation on the bike path grant that we were provided by ANDRAC, Association of New Jersey Environmental Commissions. It's an organization here in New Jersey. They funded this project to investigate putting a bicycle path network within the borough of Highlands. And the objective overall was to make use of the regional path that cuts through Highlands, the Henry Hudson path. This is a county-run path that, except for a few missing portions, runs from Highlands all the way to Freehold through Madawa. So with the bridge being completed and the bike path providing access to Sandy Hook, we're expecting that bike path or bike traffic will increase in town. And here's an opportunity for those coming through town and the residents of Highlands to have a bike path network that brings you to the great points of interest we have in town. The parks, Military Beach, the county parks up to Horseshoe Woods, Twin Lakes, and so forth. What you see in front of you is a Google Earth image, and I'm going to run this in a moment, and it gives you an aerial overview of the proposed path. This is really the culmination of the work that we've put in over the last year, and Peter Mullen, Councilman Francy, myself, Larry Thorner, a public citizen, resident of Highlands, we're all, as well as Tim Hill, the recreation director, and now the acting borough manager, all got together to help work this out and use the assistance of Marty Truscott at TNM to assist us. You have, if you'd like, up front, a copy of the draft report on the bike path. But what I'd like to do with you, I think the most interesting part, is to run through the proposed path. And I'll have a few words as we go. Good evening, Mayor. Thank you. path starts off at Pampamora Park, the county park, and see the kiosk sign. We're going to have kiosks at strategic locations along the path that provide a map of the bike path system, as well as current events in Highlands, different festivals, and so on that might be going on, so that those coming through might decide to come back on another day or evening and enjoy some of the other features of town. And we're now obviously going down Shore Drive. This is part of the Henry Hudson Path that travels through the whole length of town. And what we'll do then with our bike path system is have jump-off points off of the path that take you to various points of interest in town. So we're deviating off the Henry Hudson Path now and heading over towards the community center, or what we're calling the Huddy section of the bike path network. We'll have another kiosk located at the community center because folks might go there with their bikes on their cars, and that might be a jump off point from them at that point. And along the way, the kiosk map will have similar view as we see here, showing you where public beaches are, where the parks are, where the business districts are, and where they can get a bite to eat or a cup of coffee. Along Marine Place, you see, we have two locations where we say views and vistas. We're envisioning having a panel at those locations where people could look at an interpretive sign and look out at the vista and identify Sandy Hook and Coney Island and New York City skyline in the distance. Here we come back around to the other section of Marine Place. The bike path system in Highlands will all be what we call share the road. There's obviously not a lot of space on our streets. We have parking on both sides. So we'll need to develop a path as a share the road. So there'll be signage identifying the path, as well as markings on the roadways. And this will give the motorists awareness of the bikers and the bikers knowledge of where they should be going along the route. So in the Huddy section, we have what we call Business District West. Now you see further down on Bay Avenue, Business District East. We would envision having bike paths, or bike racks, I should say, at these different locations, as well as the parks and other points of interest, so folks could put their bikes on the racks and enjoy whatever there is in the park, or go into one of the businesses and have a secure place for their bike. Miller Street Beach, we see right ahead of us there, another kiosk located there. We might not have a large kiosk at all these locations that include the events and so on, but certainly we would have a map of the bike path system at each of these locations. And we're coming down Shrewsbury Avenue towards Veterans Park. And here we would expect another kiosk, informational kiosk, bike rack, and then we cut across Bay Avenue and head back onto Shore Drive, or also the Henry Hudson Trail. And that sort of completes the lower section, the downtown section of the bike path system. And now we're heading over to what will begin the Highland, or the uphill or hill section of the bike path. You notice that there's the South Bay Avenue Park. Expect we'd have a kiosk there, and that may serve as the eastern entrance into town for those that may be coming from Seabright or Sandy Hook as their point of origination, coming into town to bike throughout town, maybe get something to eat, and so on. Obviously, the path will go under the bridge, not over it, but the program is not that smart. So at this point, the path is going up Portland Road, and we don't have a lot of features here, so I'm going to speed us up a little bit. This obviously is the more challenging portion of the path, and we probably designate that on the map, letting people know that there's steep inclines and declines, and that they might want to be cautious if they're not a hardcore biker. We're rounding the corner at Windmore and heading up towards Horchon Woods. We've had along the way discussions with the Monmouth County, and we're coordinating with them and Atlantic Highlands on common signage so that we could, folks that are biking in the area, see all the same sort of signage. We'd likely have a kiosk again at this location. Again, people take their bikes up to Horchon Woods to bike on the mountain trails, may decide then that they want to bike down the town. So this will give them information on how to do that. There's also a group that's looking at paths between Horchon Woods and Twin Lakes up around Henry Hudson. And we haven't yet, but we're going to coordinate with them in an effort to try to kind of maximize our path interest here.
Is anybody leaving the windows of the cars open? Because it's raining pretty hard.
Thank you.
So we've come down now onto Highland Avenue and heading back towards Ulster Hook. And that pretty much completes the path as we've envisioned it. Now, obviously, there's the possibility of going over on the bridge out onto Seabright and onto Sandy Hook, which we think will probably be something that people will be doing a lot of now that the bridge is completed. And they have a lot of path systems out on Sandy Hook for biking and walking and so on. We do envision having a path up on the other side of 36 over to what the Environmental Commission has made a recommendation to the council on using the old former Steinies property as an overlook park, developing it as a passive park, no car parking. It would just be accessed via bicycle or walking. And we've provided a sort of sketch using some of the old rail systems from the former bridge that were saved. They're really beautiful rail systems. And using those to sort of protect the edge of the slope where you'd walk up to get a view out of the Sandy Hook Bay, and perhaps even at the entrance way to the park to provide sort of a outline of the park. That's a proposal we've made to the council, or a suggestion on that use of that property. So this is the path system as we've envisioned, and the final report has been put together and includes this, as well as some discussion on different options for bike racks. Maybe we put the layout. So the draft report includes some basic information on the goals and so forth. I think we've discussed those already. And if you flip through to page 3, you see on the top there, there's public meetings. We had a public input meeting back in December and solicited input from the residents in town to see whether they had comments or questions. And we did have a few, tried to incorporate those as best we could. We've also had some meetings, as I said, with the county to discuss any issues they may have with the project. They're very supportive, like to see it happen. And again, we try to coordinate signage so that bikers don't see a lot of variety of signs, but see something that's consistent in the area. I've also had a meeting with Chief Blewett to discuss the path, any concerns he might have. Again, he's very supportive of the project. Felt that where we were crossing Bay Avenue and so forth, the busier drives were reasonable, and even the possibility of perhaps putting in a pedestrian and bike yield signs like we see pretty often now, particularly in the summer months, we see often on Ocean Avenue now, just to warn people that there might be a lot of foot or bike path traffic crossing the main roadway. But otherwise, the chief was very supportive of the project. Didn't see any particular problems. If you look on page 5, table 1, Marty did some work on the roadways that are being proposed in the bike path project, and gave a sort of description of the road conditions, number of travel lanes, whether there's parking regulations associated with them. And in Table 2, the analysis as to the reasonableness of these roadways, or different roadways that meet these conditions. And I think, Marty, in all cases, it's reasonable that you share the road on all these roadways. So that was quite important. And this is what we're going to use, of course. This report will be used to solicit grant funds from other agencies to help implement this, to pay for the bike racks, pay for the signage, for the markings on the street, the templates. These are, they're templates that have bikes and different images, so as to notify those that are biking and those in cars that there's a share of the road bike network there. On the following page, on page 7, you see some photos of different bike racks. So some might be appropriate at some locations and others in other locations. Certainly those that we put downtown in the business area where sidewalks are kind of narrow, there's not a lot of space, we'd use a more upright bike rack, smaller condensed type, in areas like the community center and other areas in the parks where we have more space, we can use some of the larger bike racks, those that might accommodate more bikes. At the bottom of page 7, there's some discussion of the kiosks, but again, those are there to provide information to the bikers on where they can go, where the bike paths are, and also current events that could be changed at maybe monthly or every couple of months to give those that are coming through information about what's happening in town. Also on page 8 then, or on page 8, discussion about the interpretive displays, and very brief, but these were the sorts of things that I mentioned when we were at Marine Place, where you'd look at a board and it would give you some interpretive information about the views that you're seeing from Marine Place. And perhaps also up at the Stymie property if that comes to be, so that there's a mapping or interpretive map that shows you what you're viewing out in the distance. There's a variety of signs that we could use. Again, we're going to coordinate with the county and Atlantic Highlands to make sure that we have consistent signage. Street markings, again, we'll do it consistent with the county and Atlantic Highlands. On page 10, we did a little bit of a survey. We had to do something a little more extensive at the time of implementation, but to look over the road conditions other than what Marty did in terms of the technical specifications, but items like storm drains to make sure that they're not the old groove type that would grab your tire, but this type that you see here where you can bike and roll right over without having any problems. Most of our grades are this kind, which is great news. So there'd be very little, if any, change apps that would be needed. And then finally, there's some discussion on funding sources that Marty provided in the report, Montana Park System. New Jersey DOT, Department of Transportation, has quite a lot of money for bike paths and walking paths, even in this climate of economic woes. So we're hoping to get this completed, finalized within the next week or two, and then we can start applying for other grants to implement. So that's sort of the idea. And then on the following page, there's a couple other opportunities for funding. And then finally, and part of the reason we're here in front of the planning board is that the granting agency asked us to, as one final step, request of the planning board the inclusion of the bike path network report within the master plan of the borough. And so this final comment in the report actually is a comment of consistency with the borough master plan, and you see there the comment that it's consistent with the circulation plan element of the 2004 master plan, and that recommendation contains the statement that we see there below that is encouraging regional biking and bike routes within the borough. So we think this really does. not a requirement for us to get our matching funds, that the planning board accept this or integrate it into the master plan, but it is that we request that it be done. And I think it would probably be a worthwhile endeavor. So that's what we have to offer.
Okay. Does anybody on the board have any questions or comments?
I think this is really well done and very well thought out. As you were going through this, Steve, I was thinking about that North Marina area. And I know you've got it here on page 5, and then you make the comment on page 9 about they're always parked on both sides of the street. I know that from neighborhood watch tours.
Yes.
So you got to be sharing the bikes with it. Now, I'm assuming Chief Blewett's, he's okay with this because it really isn't traveled heavily. Is that correct to say?
That's right. You know, that's part of the analysis that Marty did that you see in Table 2, where there's some recommendations, guidelines in the literature about bike share the road bike path networks. And if you have high speed of travel vehicles or a lot of volume, then they're less successful. You have more problems with those types. Here are the vehicle...
Don't have either.
Right.
Right, gotcha.
Low speed and relatively low volume. So, it's not ideal, of course. We'd love to have a dedicated path that, you know, runs through town, but Highlands is a built-out area, and we're sort of dense. So this is an alternative that's used in many communities throughout the country, and works very well.
Very good.
No, I think it's great.
Yeah, they did a great job.
Very
good. He did a good job.
Thanks. Marty and the rest
the whole
of the
crew,
team,
yeah.
Chris and
the whole
Peter,
team, yeah. Absolutely.
Larry and Tim, everybody really helped out. Came out on a Saturday, we walked the whole route, we drove part of it, walked part of it.
You can tell you guys did your homework.
Yeah. Really try to maximize our dollars. And T&M was very gracious, too, with doing quite a bit of work, I think a little over above what we paid them.
We make a.
Okay.
We stay here until you're done.
We have 4
We have 6. Have 5. You have 5 without.
Yeah.
Mr. Shulman, so you can see.
You're okay. Just let the record show that Mr. Shulman stepped down for a few moments to take an emergency phone call. I was just about to say, I think we should entertain a motion to draft a letter of support from the planning board. The Environmental Commission for this purpose.
In the form of a resolution, Mr. Chairman.
Right.
Support and also a finding of consistency with the master plan.
Yeah.
So that they can have that to show to whatever the authorities are to show that the board examined it in connection with the master plan. And did review that section of it, and it certainly is consistent.
For the record.
Mr. Zlob, okay. Is there a deadline for this to be submitted?
There isn't. At this point, we're going to just polish up this draft, typos and things like that. Mention that we made a presentation to the council a couple of weeks ago, announced the planning board, and what the outcome was.
And to the police department.
Yes, and this is going to complete the report, and we'll submit it to the grant agency, and then the borough can get their share of the matching portion of the grant sent to us in a check. So that's completed. I know that there may be some additional work to actually incorporate it into the master plan. I don't know whether the planning board has to have a public hearing to do that or not. I don't know.
To amend the master plan?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
There's a process.
So,
but
that's fine.
And it is consistent with the master plan. So.
Right. So that could happen at the time frame and in the time that's necessary for the planning board to operate without impeding the finalization.
All right, so we had a motion from Mayor Nolan.
I'll offer
second.
I'll second.
Second by Mr. Parla. This is for a resolution that will be adopted at the next meeting, the July meeting. Mr. Mullen?
Yes.
Mr. Schulner? He stepped out. Mr. Parla?
Yes.
Mayor Nolan?
Yes.
Mr. Stockton?
Yes.
Ms. Ruby?
Yes.
Okay.
Motion carries.
Okay.
Thank you
again.
Thanks so much.
Okay. Next item on the agenda is under action of any other business is discussion regarding the zoning ordinance amendment. I think we might want to table that for a minute or two. And
yes, you want some other things.
Can you go past? You can come back to it, right?
Yeah, right, Mr. Shulman.
So we're gonna hold that for a moment, and then we're gonna jump down to item 11, approval of minutes. And in your packets, you do have the planning board minutes from the May 12th meeting. And if anybody has any comments or corrections to add to those, now's the time to do that.
Offered by Mr. Mullen.
I'll second.
Second by Mayor Nolan. Mr. Shulman, we're on the approval of minutes, which you are eligible to vote on.
Yeah.
Okay, so Mr. Mullen?
Yes.
Mr. Shulman? Mr. Shulman?
Yes.
Mr. Parla?
Yes.
Mayor Nolan?
Yes.
Motion carries.
Okay. And then now that Mr. Shulman's back, we can go back to the second item under number 10 on our agenda, discussion with regard to the zoning ordinance amendment, and that I think pertains to the Shadow Lawn Trailer Park property, and because of that I am conflicted out, so I'm stepping down and turning the meeting over to our Vice Chairman. Mr. Shulman.
This is on the Economic Center resolution.
We have this is with regard to the report we received.
Yes, we should get Mr. Trescott's one. Yeah, Chairman, you authored on behalf of the subcommittee the report, so I'll close that with questions. Solemnly swear the testimony about the truth and the smell of the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth.
I do.
Please state your name for the record and your position with the board.
Mark Trescott, I'm a planner, P&M Associates, a consultant planner to the planning board.
Thank you.
Okay,
we have the report of the subcommittee, and you have to have a discussion amongst yourselves as well. And that's just a report of the subcommittee. Time for the board to consider the matter that was referred over. Maybe just as a matter of clarification for everybody, so that we have a good scorecard on this, so to speak, a good flow chart. It isn't truly an ordinance itself. It's ideas for a proposed ordinance amendment. So you're reviewing that under your review powers, and you're going to make your recommendations. It goes back to council. Council takes what you've done. They have a public meeting where the public will participate, be sworn in, and discuss. If the council decides to adopt an ordinance amending the current zoning ordinance that emanates from this, that ordinance, before it's adopted, has to come back here again. The board has to make comments again,
public input.
And have public input on that ordinance at that point in time. Having public input tonight is a discretionary item. They'll be moved. Another opportunity over the council level, and there's another opportunity that comes back here, and then it gets sent back to council, and then council has to act. So there's it's a three-step process. This isn't a situation where you got the actual ordinance drafted, sent over, and you're giving comments on the ordinance. This is more of a preliminary discussion. With that, I'll be quiet. You take it over.
Are we going to discuss this at the table tonight?
I would assume you are.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah. That would be the task. That's what we have to do. Yeah. The board has to discuss it. Yes. And
we have a timeline.
Yeah.
And make your recommendations on what's in there. Anything else that the other board members who aren't on a subcommittee feel they want to have.
Is everybody out on the table?
The public, yes.
Don't know. They have it.
Yes.
And then you decide. What your recommendations are, and consistencies or inconsistencies with the requests being made by council with the master plan.
Okay. We'll start with Mayor Nolan.
Sure. At the council table, we voted unanimously for the planning board to take a look at the old ordinance 0707. The planning board decided to make a subcommittee, which was four people, myself, Mr. Shulman, Mr. Parla, and Ms. Peterson. What we did was we looked at what we thought were some of the uses that were good, some that might be offered to entice something to happen there. And what we also did was put things in there that we thought would be a lightning rod of protest. In my opinion, clearly the high rise the last time was the protest point. Number six on page two, the subcommittee does not endorse the high rise, but is open to other multifamily residential uses. We did endorse a mid-rise in this document, which is interpreted 6 to 8 stories, just because of how many you see going up and down the waterfront from Monmouth Beach to Highlands. We also put other uses in there as secondary uses. Clearly, we don't want to see a strip mall up there. But, you know, we also don't want to stop a project from happening that will maybe has something like East Point does at the top of their building, like a club room. It basically spells out, we took, I guess, 4 council people. I think somebody didn't put any up, right, Chris? 4 of us put up 3 ideas, 2 or 3 ideas, whatever it was. Yeah, and we kind of, all the subcommittee looked at those ideas. Some of our ideas were kind of the same, just worded a little different at the council table. And we addressed everyone. I think we have everybody at the council table recognizes, too, that a high-rise would be something that would be too impactful at this point. And quite frankly, I don't even know if they could do it economically in this climate. That's about it. I think we voted unanimously at the subcommittee for what we put in this document.
Yes.
It talks about density and changing some of the density in lieu of having public access to the sides of the property to look at the view on both sides. That was kind of what we envisioned in conversation with parking up there for non-residents to go and actually view. It's like, I believe it's one of the highest points on the Eastern Seaboard. So you can view New York Harbor and stuff like that with, you know, 4 or 5 parking spots maybe on either side and a way to go out there and actually look even if you don't own anything up there. We also put in, we tried to limit the density of the buildings by the height. So in other words, let's say they approve 7 stories for argument's sake. We would make it that the buildings have to be 7 stories apart. This way it also has access for emergency vehicles and things like that. It's not that congested. We tried to do it to entice something to happen up there. I believe it's something along the lines of how many acres? 12 to 14?
14
acres. And right now the people at the council table are paying more in property tax or close to it than that whole spot. And that's just an economic reality. I'm sorry if people are mad at me saying that, but that's the truth. So we're trying to entice something. The property owner obviously wants to do something, and I personally believe in the individual rights of the property owner, and we're also trying to protect everyone that lives there. And we've put in many things in many other ordinances to back up what's already listed in state laws. We did it with our argument, to give you an example, the bid ordinance. We put in the writing in there as a council unanimously to make sure that it was open requestable, even though we didn't have to do that because it actually says it in the state statute. So we're going to put in here the same type of thing to cover people. If there is a document at the end that the council approves, we're going to put in there the same thing to back up the people who live there, that they'll have every right that they're supposed to have if, in fact, something does happen there. That's all.
Okay.
My synopsis.
The only thing I wanted to mention was that even though Janet Peterson's not here tonight, she was a big help and she had a lot to contribute at the subcommittee meeting and subsequent to that. I know she did a very careful reading of the draft that Mr. Truscott had done because she made some additions and corrections. So,
as well as the master plan.
Yeah, so she was really very helpful. I didn't want anybody to think that because she's not here tonight,
no,
that she wasn't really a big help on this. But I agreed with the recommendations that were made, and I do believe this is much more consistent with the master plan.
Okay. Ruby, I don't know
you're
in on this
at
all, right?
She read it, I mean,
right?
Right, but I don't have any comments.
Well, I'm the first one who hasn't been a member of the subcommittee, so I'm really asking questions about some of the process that went on. And the first item talks about maintaining the current maximum density. I wasn't clear on what the subcommittee considered the current maximum density. the, if there are 14 acres up there and there are 114 units or something, there's less than 10 units an acre, maybe 9 units an acre. The current surrounding zone around there, the R203, is a 5,000 square foot lot area, and the density is 8.7 units per acre. And did the committee consider that that would be a basis for developing the density for this property?
I think what we talked about, Peter, was that it was 14 now, and on page...
I don't believe it's 14 now. That's my question.
I thought it was 14.
It is.
There's that no density requirements in mobile home parks I'm aware of.
I think that they were considering the acreage with buildable property. We built the land and then came up with 14.
14 is the zoning requirement.
Marty, is it 14 or?
That's what I'm just looking up right now. give me a minute. I was just checking. I'm just looking at the zoning schedule. Let me just check the actual ordinances. Move on to another topic.
Okay, in the second item, I noticed that the idea of having any sort of ridgeline protection, which was part of the master plan, was deemed too complex or too arbitrary or some such thing. And I would recommend that that isn't the case and that ridgeline protection is an important feature of the master plan. And I think it could be handled in the same way that CAFRA does it at the shoreline, where the proximity of buildings to the high water mark is a relationship of the height of the structure and the distance away from that shoreline. And I think that we might consider it enacting an ordinance where the height of the building is some ratio set apart from or set distant from the ridgeline.
Well,
I think that would have the net effect of reducing the profile of buildings on the skyline.
The way that, and I didn't bring it with me, but the way it's worded in the master plan didn't make really any sense, because this quote was right from, they don't want anything that would create a silhouette against the skyline, but that would be anything that's higher than a tree would actually create a silhouette against the skyline. That's,
well, I think maybe any is a difficult thing to achieve, but I think ridgeline protection in general is to control the silhouette of property. And I think that high-rise building was an extreme example of it not doing it. But if you have a three-story building and you have to set it six stories back away from the ridge, then I think that you have less impact with that building than if you put it 25 feet away from the ridge, which is what our current ordinance provides in the steep slope.
Oh, you're talking about the distance from the building to the edge of the ridge, not the height, the silhouette that's created.
I'm talking about a relationship between the location of a building vis-a-vis the ridgeline as a proportion of its height. So if it's one story high, it goes two stories back. If it's six stories high, it goes 12 stories back, or something like that.
Well, I don't remember the current wording even touching on that. That's what's kind of bothering me.
Mr. Farley, while you look that up,
yes.
There is no density requirement in the MH zone, as you said, in the mobile home zone, as you're saying. I think the council's reference is probably for the multifamily zone, for the 14 unit per acre maximum density. And I think that must be the reference in it. And I know when I was thinking of density, I was thinking of the density that's the highest density in the town, that multifamily zone. I'm thinking of multifamily use. So. But you're correct, there is no maximum of 14 units per acre in the MH zone.
And back to that first question then, did the subcommittee give any thought to maintaining a density that is truly consistent with the use that's there currently and the use that fully surrounds the property, with the exception of the East Point property, which is far in excess of densities permitted?
There was no, I guess I won't speak to the subcommittee, but I don't recall any discussion that was brought.
No. Not at all.
I think it might be appropriate to consider that, especially given that the idea idea in the master plan was to make it consistent with the surrounding uses.
Which is East Point, also.
But I think it's unfair to really compare to East Point, because East Point is not a permitted use.
But it's not fair, because it fits this argument, but it is a use, and it is there. It's been
no,
there
but
30
I think
years.
In terms of planning, you can't use a non-conforming structure or a non-conforming use as a basis for the justification for the zoning. And I think that was...
Well, we really don't know what we have there yet until we get plans. This is still in the infancy stages. We don't know where we are as far as property, you know, the ridge, how many houses we can put up. It's not there. We don't know what it is.
Well, but you're setting a density. You're saying it should be 14, and I'm questioning that. I don't know whether it should be 14. Well, if the surrounding zone is predominantly is significantly less than 8.7, why are we going to 14?
Yeah. I found that exact wording. This is.
Are we jumping to item two?
We're jumping in. This is a quote the master plan. The borough should consider creating a ridgeline protection ordinance to ensure that development near ridgeline areas blends in with rather than interrupts or modifies the natural contour elevations of the tract. Ridgeline areas should be retained in a natural state. Development should be sited in such a manner so as to not create a silhouette against the skyline as viewed from the designated vantage points. So all this was talking about was that. It wasn't talking about how close to a cliff or anything. You know what I'm talking about? We were almost
no,
talking
I think
two different
to
things.
Me, that sets the thinking for how do you achieve those things. And it seems to me, if we're talking about building, you achieve it by means of setbacks. That's a very standard process. If you're trying to protect something, you
that.
Set back from it. If you try to protect a wetland, you don't build next to it. If you want to protect a steep slope, you don't build right on it. You set back from it. And the same with the ridgeline. And the same with the shoreline.
It's got to be worded differently, then, doesn't it? I mean, I'm not an architect, but it just doesn't make any sense to me. All it's talking about here is elevation and sighting. There's nothing in here about pushing development back in a setback position.
Wouldn't that be on a site plan?
Yeah.
That would have to come here again?
Yeah.
Well, anything would have to
come here. No, I mean, I thought that would be part of a site plan, not necessarily a zone.
No. I think we're developing the regulations on which this land can be developed in the future. That's what this document is for. Am I wrong?
No, you're right.
And if the subcommittee felt that it wasn't important to do anything with regard to the ridgeline because they felt that it wasn't properly worded, I'm giving you my interpretation. I think that what they were trying to do was to impact the development of the site so that it considered the ridgeline. And I think that this isn't something that is necessarily peculiar to this site. This is something that ridgeline runs all the way from the bridge to the end of town.
But we don't have to set a standard on it, right? We can do that ourselves.
Well, we're making general recommendations.
Yeah, that's all it is.
And I'm questioning whether we should have eliminated the site, the protection of the ridge line. That's part of it.
So what you're saying is that what we were saying was the language in vague was vague. We didn't want to include it. What you're saying is we need different language.
Or clarify.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yes. Then you put a setback in there.
Well, my interpretation of what you read is that we have to have some vehicle to protect the ridge.
Like a setback from the height of the building?
And I had made a recommendation of that being part of it.
Yeah. Peter, like a setback of the height of the building?
Yes.
Well, it's a ratio
right.
related to the height of the building
okay.
and the setback from the ridge.
Okay.
And
do we have that established anywhere else, right, that we can mirror that or at least start there?
Well, CAFRA has it in terms of all waterfront development.
Okay.
The height of the building and the shoreline, the high water mark is established.
Okay.
And so it's a concept
okay.
that's out there.
Right.
I don't think we have anything in our ordinance.
We don't have it anything right now existing. But it's something we could bring into the next as a recommendation or at least talk
right.
about.
Right, and I'm suggesting that it might be a consideration of this subcommittee to add that to their report to the council, and then the council could consider it.
What about townhouses? How many townhouses are we getting here?
It says in here, as far as connected,
yeah.
It says in here should be limited to what we recommend as a subcommittee, limited to four.
Yeah.
Because you didn't want to see a row of 20. That was our idea.
Yeah,
you didn't want to see
understand
for aesthetics.
That.
Right.
But how many think we could get in there?
Oh, I have no idea. I don't really know.
See, these are things we got to figure out before we make a.
No, but I don't think there's a problem recommending what Peter said, sending that with whatever we decide tonight, send that back as far as even the setback from the ridge line.
Right.
Figure that into the conversation at the next, you know, table, and then mm-hmm. now I'm sure we'll go from that table back to this table too.
Okay.
And maybe have a little have more information in front of us.
Yeah.
So we can get that idea.
Yeah. Okay.
Another thing that was confusing to me is that you mentioned the number of units in townhomes, but then there is a provision where you could have 8-story structures.
We were just different uses. That's all. We didn't know whoever was going to do anything up there. The current man could, you know, person could sell. We just wanted to could open as many possibilities as you could with one ordinance rather than having to keep changing things. We figured, actually, we're trying to look at the worst case scenario of anything that people would do. We wanted to limit the height 6 to 8. We wanted to limit the distance in between buildings, like we've seen them saying, so the height of the building would never be approved. So you get emergency vehicles through. We wanted to limit in case somebody wanted to put 200 townhouses in a row, you know, 2 rows of 100, you know, whatever, just because it would look bad, we thought. That was kind of why we did that.
But the density of an 8-story building would have to be something like the TAC towers or something to really make sense for a developer, wouldn't it? I mean, they have to put elevators in, they have to do some consolidated parking, they have to do a lot of site development.
There would be a lot of site development,
as opposed to a single family or townhome structure where you don't need all of those things. You have individual parking, your premises, you walk into your thing. And I like the idea of 4 units. I think that's
excellent. We just want to go more than that because you don't want to roll up.
Well, I think that it maintains the character of that hill to have the single family look.
I think it's less congested too if you do it that way.
But I think something like a TAC tower sitting on the top of that hill would not be appropriate.
How many stories is that?
8 stories.
It is 8.
And I don't, you mentioned there were lots of them along the beach from Monmouth to here.
There's some.
I don't know where they are.
Oh, there's, go down the higher Monmouth Beach, there's a lot of them.
On this beach,
all the way down. I think there's a 31 in Asbury, and then you go all the way down.
Oh, they're high rise.
See,
they're high rise.
Well, I think they're mid rise too on Monmouth Beach. I don't think they're more than 8 stories. Long Branch, you know, all the way down.
Long Branch, yes, but
I remember Jack probably said it, Rod probably said it 100 times. We wanted to put so many things in there that if something good were to happen and everybody wanted to do it, we didn't have to go through all this again. Just different uses in there. That's basically what we were going for as a subcommittee. And still not have the high impact of a, 180-story building or, 20-unit density type of thing. Just try to stay somewhat reasonable.
And well, my point about it's a completely different thing to do a
totally
cluster townhome
than
it is to do an 8-story building up there.
I agree.
And I for one think that they're much more difficult to develop in accordance with the master plan as it is currently written than the curvilinear development of single family and townhomes, which is something that it does.
What we did talk about at the subcommittee was the impact of, let's say for argument's sake, it was 180 townhouses there, more on the top of the hill. Of an impact, and obviously be back from the steep slope areas and the drops and stuff like that. But we were worried more so about slides with more development on top. And we talked about that a few times. I mean, if that's what it turns out to be, that's what it turns out to be. Because I remember sitting here, and I know you sat through the whole process too, when they were talking about the high rise at that point. Their argument was it was going to stabilize the hill more if they were going down into it. Where the townhouses, if you had a couple of hundred up there on top, may not be as stabilizing as.
Well, I would defer to the applicants in terms of their structural engineering.
Engineering, of course.
No, I agree
with you. Yeah.
Really,
we were just trying to hit all the bases, while we were having these conversations.
Well, I think that my feeling is 8-story buildings would not be consistent with the master
We also put in, you know, access on the way we set it up. Our vision was on both sides with parking for the public development.
Well, we have the room for that, though.
We don't even know what the site's going to be.
We try to
keep everything open.
Trying to do this with a crystal ball.
Right.
I think we have to have site plan out before we make any decisions.
Well, then we would do that at the planning board, though, at the individual site plan. You can't. We don't even know if anything's going to happen up there with the economy.
Oh, I know.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
It could sell three times. You know, you know.
Okay. Any other discussion?
I think we should offer what? Well, go ahead, Peter.
I thought the bonus for public access is an interesting thought. I'm not sure it's necessarily consistent with a purely residential development. But,
I got the same way.
Also, there was a suggestion, and I've forgotten what it is, where they were talking about adding uses to this site on a conditional use basis. And I think Jack can probably speak to this. I don't know whether it was a mistake in the master plan to increase the number of permitted uses or whether to increase the number of conditional uses. But it seems to me a conditional use has inherent problems in that it assumes that the planning board has identified the impacts of that particular type of development, and in developing the conditions of the development, are setting the outside perimeters of where the planning board can go in terms of controlling development. If they meet, if you remember the high rise, they had to have a certain height, they had to have a certain setback. As soon as they met that, the only thing they needed was some changes in steep slope, because the area where they're developing, they had to eliminate some steep slopes. So that there was no room for the planning board to modify that application because they met all of the conditions. And I think for the same reason you have a hard time divining what can go on in this site, it's also very hard to divine all the conditions that are necessary to make any of the proposed uses conditional uses versus permitted uses.
Done all the time. And I get what you're saying, but conditional uses are common. And when you put them in there, when you put them in there, you have to put specific conditions.
But the presumption is that those specific conditions are all that need to be met
in addition to the general requirement.
Right, exactly. So typical conditional use is a bed and breakfast in a residential zone. And those are residential uses that are then have slightly more impact, and they define what the planning board decides. Well, what are the impacts of parking? There's this, and they make those conditional uses, hours of operation, or whatever they are. And then that, if a guy can do that, he can do that as of right.
Correct.
But I think it's hard when we're trying to decide whether you do 8-story buildings or townhouses.
Well, whenever the council, if and when the council decides 4, 6, 8, 10, doesn't whatever it might be, they're going to have to come up with specific conditions or request us to come up with specific conditions that will work for a 4, 6, 8, 10 or whatever it might be. And that's where we get this gentleman here to help us out.
And as opposed to making a permitted use?
Well, conditional use gives you much more control, gives you another element of control. It's usually stricter. Okay.
I thought it took away some of your
discretion. No, I see it the other way. I see it the other way. Remember, there shouldn't be a whole lot of discretion when you're talking about people's rights. There's discretion regarding compliance with engineering or some of those things. But when you get down to the specifics of projects, it should be clear so you avoid a claim of void for vagueness on an appeal.
But in the same thing, when you can't meet all the conditions, you don't say the planning board, you go to the zoning board.
If you don't meet all the specific conditions, it's considered a use variance and non-permitted, and you need to go for a use variance. General conditions aren't necessarily due out of the planning board to go to.
You can get waivers from those, but the conditions in the conditional use are the ones that keep
you specific conditions.
So if you make it a permitted use, it stays at the planning board.
Yeah, but it's more strict, because if they can't comply with those specific conditions, you've got a use variance, and you sat on the planning on the zoning board, so you know that the requirement to get a use variance is a much more difficult vote than it is to get both variants. That's the theory behind it, that it's much more strict. It's more stringent as opposed to liberal. Yes, it does limit the power of the planning board, because if it doesn't specifically meet them, planning board loses jurisdiction, it goes over to the zoning.
Well, I'm not sure, but I think I would suggest that we make these permitted uses not conditional.
That's your call. That's your call. You asked me what the law and structure, that's your call. I'm just
put
trying
it
to
in
give
the,
advice.
Put in the recommendations back to
yeah,
the
put in the recommendations.
I have no problem, you know. Everyone,
and whether you want that, they omit these proposed uses as conditional and make them.
Well, I think that they should give strong consideration to making any new uses at the site permitted uses, not conditional uses.
Okay, I don't have a problem with that.
No,
it's up to you guys. And also, we're going to add in there, Mr. Chairman, the. We have to get information on the setbacks
yes.
as it relates to
yep.
the ridgeline and everything else.
Setbacks.
And was there any discussion about the density?
No.
I think we left it that way.
Yeah.
And we did that to make it, quite frankly, economically viable to do something.
I think one of the things we also have to consider, it was in your report, was that a good bit of this site is not really buildable.
That's what we said, about 2 to 3 acres, I believe, right? I think it's 2 acres.
Maybe more,
yeah.
It's a 14-acre site. And I think that what happens with that is the densities, as you see them in a development in town, downtown, for instance, where we have a lot of R14,
right.
or FAR, big use or high-density structures, it'll change that because it makes it much more dense.
No doubt.
On the top. And it won't have the same configuration because you have so much.
So you want to add to it that we make a recommendation that we only acknowledge the buildable in concern to density?
I don't know.
I look at this like a. We're kind of. Well, no. We're sending a. We're sending thoughts back to the other table.
Yeah.
At that point, we iron it out. We try to anyway, and then you come back here for the whole. You know, where it's 2-3 hour type of situation, you know what I mean? And at that point, we really need to have all our information of what Mr. Mullen's saying and anything else anyone could think of as it impacts that and really make a decision, yay or nay, you know, what we want to do.
Is there a steep slope right in the middle?
I think I have something that might help.
What's that?
In terms of density, a recommendation, generalized recommendation to look at ridgeline protection, setbacks, lot coverage, open space requirements, all of that to be taken into consideration when deciding the density, and because that's where it really
yeah. you almost have to model the site to really see what you can make a lot of decisions.
Take all of that
into here, but you really can't
just don't throw a number. Take into consideration all of these other items that will get you
to make that number
the appropriate development and appropriate.
And I'm not looking to take away development rights from the owner, but I'm also not looking to cram a lot of building into a very small area.
There you go.
That's
way both sides, yeah, no doubt.
Also, there is an aspect in reading through some of the stuff of this. The original findings of the planning board for 0707 are some of them are completely contradicted in your findings in this. I don't know whether that's an issue or not.
No.
Because that didn't really happen now.
That
was all a dream, Peter.
Or a nightmare,
whichever way you look at it.
Wasn't there a steep slope right in the middle of the property that they had removed, put those other buildings up?
Yeah.
But it was man-made.
That wouldn't affect it at all, right?
I think it goes back to what you're putting there.
Yeah, I mean,
right
they removed that if they had to use that property.
I think, is that going to be more of a site plan thing when you decide what there, someone comes and says they want to
do? That testimony was that it was man-made.
Yeah, I
called in the finger.
That's what I'm saying. If you're
still
challenged,
Steve,
that's actually
not
the conversation, right?
I don't know how the project's going to be developed.
If there's
a discrepancy.
I'm concerned about the inconsistency between this planning board report and a previous planning board report for the same site. We're definitely creating
Well, let's get it right. As long as we get it correct, I can't undo a past mistake except get it right this time.
And that goes to my last point, which is part of the appellate court's decision and their decision to review the spot zoning issue on this site, because it does benefit one person, one entity, and I think that we have to be very, very careful that the reason, the purpose for us developing this new ordinance is for the general welfare. wrote this thing, they've elected to address this in order to provide guidance in the event that a future ordinance is adopted in response to this opinion. So they're telling us that they want us to think about that and address that. That's the end of my comments.
So what does that mean? That means we should make some kind of statement in this report?
To have some sort of purpose at the beginning of it that sets out why we're doing this and what are the goals.
You want to make that statement?
Sure. I think a straightforward approach would be to have the council address any potential claims for spot zoning issues with relationship to the zoning, any ordinance that's created for the property or amendment, and also to be mindful of the holding in the case. Make sure that that's reviewed and be consistent with the holding. Although they did strike down the ordinance, but be consistent with the holding in the case.
And in furtherance of that, the
I know one of the things we talked about too was to make sure we mention the master plan.
Yeah, well, we have to. Our task is to not only make recommendations on such other matters as we deem relevant, but also we have to decide. We have to tell the council whether or not we think these proposals are consistent or inconsistent with the master plan.
Right.
Some of them aren't. I think it's pretty. We have to identify that. Going back to council, that's our task.
And I think the density issue was something that I raised specifically because if it was to be, that site was to be enveloped by the surrounding zone, one could argue that we're not spot zoning that thing. We're just letting it go into a sort of a natural absorption into it of an adjacent zone. But if you develop a new and better density or lot coverage or any of that sort of thing, that is a particularly benefit.
I know we identified a couple of the recommendations as not being consistent.
Well,
we should make sure that those are pointed out to the council when it goes back.
Right. Well, for example, the mid-rise specifically is not consistent with the
right. Yeah, we have to identify that. That's one of our primary tasks, anything that's inconsistent with the recommendations. Or any of the recommendations, that are inconsistent with the master plan has to be noted.
Yeah, the master plan just suggests that we recommended expanding permitted uses to include townhouses and single family. That's And some of the other things about sensitivity to the bridge line. But that's in terms of uses, that's what I addressed.
Right. So we have to identify that issue.
Can the planning board actually send recommendations to the council that are inconsistent with the master plan?
Yes. Planning board has to do two things. It has to identify what the council has sent over to us that's consistent and inconsistent. If we're being asked to create things on our own, if we're just asked to review things, we just do a standard review, consistency, inconsistency. You've got the catch-all phrase that says you can also comment on other matters you deem relevant and important. That's where if you feel something should be done, although it's not consistent with the master plan, you can send it over, whether or not the council goes for it or not.
So that would be a recommendation for zone change, then?
Exactly, essentially. A recommendation for zone change and also a recommendation ultimately for the master plan change. Because if you're going to recommend something that's inconsistent with the master plan, you want your master plan to track with your ordinance. Master plan, if your zoning ordinance does not track with your master plan, you give the zoning board of adjustment a very difficult task on use variance applications. Very difficult.
Oh, well, you want to make a rough draft of what we're doing and go over it again? If we missed anything?
Sure. I can give you a couple of points that I have.
Sure.
the language that will have to be developed, height of the buildings to be set based on certain criteria, a distance from the ridgeline in order to protect the ridgeline, not the silhouette issue.
It's a little more specific.
It isn't just a silhouette issue. The board was objecting to the silhouette issue, but the ridgeline protection itself is something that the board thinks that the council should consider. Density issues. Council should be looking at the density issue, and in so doing should look at the setbacks, lot coverage, open space requirements, ridgeline protection again.
Buildable area.
Finding by the board that a mid-rise use of any nature is not consistent with the current master plan as it's drafted. Change the proposed, any proposed uses or permitted use, any uses proposed for the zone from conditional to permitted uses as opposed to conditional. And also ask the council to be mindful of any spot zoning claim that could be raised in any amendments that are considered or adopted by the council, drafted by the council, as well as the Haldeman case and cite the case. Whatever the court gave instructions on that in that area. That's what I have so far.
That's what I got.
Could I ask one thing, Mr. Chairman?
Sure, go ahead.
Mr. Truscott, would you be able to bring all that information, a lot of the stuff that Mr. Mullen was citing, to the next council meeting?
You mean work that into this report?
Yeah, well, or at least have copies of what we're talking about, so we're not just looking at another vague thing and, you know, as he's talking about the setbacks pertaining to the height and the ridge line and everything else.
Okay, are you talking about...
You mentioned specific... Where is it, Mr. Mullen? Specifically listed?
Well, setbacks as a control feature are used in environmental law and CAFR regulations.
Examples of those...
Please, just setbacks. So we have some idea, we're not just throwing, you know, something on the wall. We have an idea.
I think at the council level, when you actually get into deciding what you're going to do in terms of an ordinance, I think you're going to need Mr. Truscott.
That's what I'm saying, and I think it's, you know, that's appropriate.
Was there anything else besides
different examples and criteria and methodologies and so on?
Well, maybe an idea of the surrounding density, you know, units per type of thing, you know what I mean?
Right.
I think you also have to include East Point in because it's there. But
right,
include
right,
everything,
right.
Not just something
and that is a multi-
specifically,
problem.
You know, exactly.
Yeah, even though it's higher than what's allowed.
Please, thank you.
I got a question. Aren't the ridge lines already in effect automatically in the master plan on any hill?
But it's what we're saying is it's kind of vague, right, Mr. Truscott?
The it's way
it's written in our master plan, the ridge line protection?
Well, it's all...
No, ridge line is exactly what I read. That's the only...
It's very... It's question about silhouette.
Oh,
okay.
It's about silhouette.
Yeah.
And
you might think
you
it's
can actually,
slope.
You
can
actually
think it's steep slope.
Yeah. Cheat that the placement, and you can, you know what I mean? So I think we need to develop a little more specific.
Okay, let's go from here then. All right, see what happens.
Mr. Truscott, bring this report, amend the report, bring it back to this table at our next meeting, and then we'll adopt it with a resolution.
It's up to the board. How
yep. Yep.
That is then presented to the council.
Yes.
And I would confer with Mr. Truscott, based on what he's put in his report, what I have in my notes, to a resolution that's consistent. What the board is requesting on those five or six additional issues, in addition to what's in the report now. Or however the report, or report may be amended by these as well. However it sorts out. But these new items will be addressed.
Right. After July.
I'm asking them actually in the form of a question. So
I think we should. That's
so
right.
You have to tell me.
We should hash this out at the next meeting.
Yeah.
Right.
In July, get all the information we have, figure out what we want to do, and send it forward.
Yeah, because I'm glad we got as far as we did tonight with it.
Yeah.
And you only have one council meeting in July and one in August.
Yeah, but this is before the July.
No, we need a motion.
Oh, what's that, the third Wednesday?
Yeah, the August and July.
So we would have, we can have agreement at the next planning board meeting. And have it together because the council meeting comes after.
To the next meeting.
The one meeting in July comes after.
I'll offer, Mr. Chairman.
Offered by Mayor Nolan to carry this to the next meeting.
Second.
Seconded by Mr. Parla. Mr. Mullen?
Yes.
Mr. Schulner?
Yes.
Mr. Parla?
Yes.
Ms. Ruby?
Yes.
Mayor Nolan?
Yes.
Motion carries.
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
Is there anything else planned right now for the next planning board?
No.
Because I think this is going to take a while. That's all I'm saying.
For the board members, I believe we'll have my email address. Send me your comments. And I appreciate
we're
it.
We're going to get a draft?
Send me your comments, and I'll look at my notes compared to your comments, then I'll work up a resolution.
And can you get the information that we were talking about here in that draft, too? Thank you. So we all have an idea coming in what we're looking at?
Right.
Thank you.
Okay.
The next item on the agenda was a memo we received from Lori Dibble. That's the address of the board, the mayor and the board. Mr.
Well, the only thing I've read it a couple of times. It doesn't pertain to what the board was considering on that ordinance, and I think the letter should more appropriately be addressed to council, because that's where this starts. The starting of the process starts there, and based on some information, some discussions I had this evening, the facts may have changed. Vis-a-vis that property and their rights as homeowners. So,
just to be clear, this is about a property that we did not talk about tonight.
Right. No, this is not. This is a totally different.
No. I just want to make sure everybody understands.
Yeah, so, it isn't something for the board really to consider. I think it's better. It's better sent to the mayor and council as opposed to the planning board.
Do we have to make
that for their consideration?
Wasn't she supposed to send that letter to you anyway? Did you tell her last meeting?
Did I?
Yeah.
Yes. I know I got it in one of my mailboxes.
She addressed it to Mayor Nolan and the planning board.
But all the council people got it too, no?
No, I don't believe so. That's this table now. Now it'll go to the council.
Yeah, that's our form.
The next item we had was a discussion on waterfront public access rules. We have received some memos you had suggested that we bring to the table for discussion.
Anything moving forward, I remember you were saying?
These here, I mean, they're just letters, and they seem to have changed over time. That there was some restrictions, but this last letter, the letter of May 6th from Mr. Tagliata, that indicates that previously that you had to have a public access plan in order to be eligible for certain state funding, but that requirement's been removed.
Right.
Other than that, I... Written comments were due on this by June 3rd.
And Mr. Hill, our acting administrator, did send some written comments, which were provided to you guys at the table.
Right. Which we talked about at the council meeting, correct?
Yes.
excuse me.
What else did I have to say about that? My letter of May 13th regarding Mr. Bollman's request of this board, CMX zone, pretty much state.